Just had Jesse Agler on from Dallas, and he said he might do the JFK Museum. I did at least the tour when I was a kid. The only time I went to Dallas with my grandmother, and I saw the grassy knoll and the school book depository.
The X.
Certainly.
The X right in the middle of the road. It's crazy. I mean, it's pretty surreal when you go there. Used to drive over that X every single day.
Really?
Where President Kennedy was shot. Yeah, it's gnarly. And then the grassy knoll is a trip. And then being in the depository is nuts. I mean, it's a good thing to do if you're in that town. But I have no reason to really go to that town. My parents don't even live near Dallas anymore. So they're 2 hours away. So I don't get to spend as much time there, but I would totally, totally go back.
Such
and do that.
A sad and macabre moment,
yes,
in American history. But there's been so much media, you know, movies, television programs that have dealt with it over the years.
Still.
That it's become almost mythical in its significance to American history.
It's still, I mean, every year you're like, what really happened with like the assassination of President Kennedy? It's never gonna die.
Yeah. And you know me, I'm as far from a conspiracy theorist as possible.
That one is, though, some of those you read, you go, makes sense. Makes sense. The magic bullet. I mean, it's fascinating stuff. And to go sit and look through the window it gives you a little bit of the heebie-jeebies when you do it. You must have been pretty little when you went.
Yeah, I was very young when I went.
It's
pretty
awesome.
Didn't really have the historical context necessarily. But even as a 9 or 10-year-old, you certainly had heard of the JFK assassination, and you knew it was a president and a big deal. And to be in the same spot that history, as sad as it was made, was definitely memorable to be there.
East County Crest wants to know, Woodsy, did you ever go to Billy Bob's? I did. Quite a bit.
What's Billy Bob's?
The world's largest honky-tonk, and it's in Fort Worth, and it's awesome. I mean, they have bull riding, they have mechanical bull. It's nuts. It's nuts. It's maybe the size of Petco Park. I mean, you walk in, you're like, buddy, I can't find you. I'm not going to find you. I mean, it is massive.
There's more than one bar and room there.
Oh, dude, it's huge, huge, huge. Billy Bob's kicks ass. We used to go there and watch bands and stuff play. And it's Fort Worth's great. Fort Worth's a great little town. But yeah, I just have no reason to go back there. Look where I live. That's what I always tell my parents. No, you come here. This is paradise. I'm not going to come there. We've done that. Come on out of here. There's plenty to see. Plenty to do.
Well, Padres last road trip before the All-Star break. 3 more games in Texas today, tomorrow, and then Thursday, 4th of July day game. And then back for the final 8 games at Petco Park, the last homestand heading into the All-Star break. We'll talk more Padres baseball coming up. Right now, though, Paulie's got some headlines. It is time for the Rindle Report.
And get things started here with our edition, today's edition of the Rindle Report.
Now tuned into the greatest.
Welcome to the Rindle Report with Paul Rindle.
Hi, Paul.
All right.
2 stories from the world of sports that we haven't gotten to yet.
We'll start off in Major League Baseball.
And 1 story that you didn't know you needed.
Are you laughing, biatch?
It's the Rindle Report.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
On 97.3, The Fan.
Are you ready to bless the mood? I need some help, please.
That was good.
Can I get a
All right. Good morning, my friends.
Good morning.
You know, today would have been a big day on this show 5-6 years ago. It's Hard Knocks Day. I did not know this. It's July 2nd. I guess training camps are about to start.
Not for another 2 or 3 weeks.
I thought it was always later in July.
Later in July, I think.
Well, the reason it feels like Hard Knocks is starting earlier than normal is because, well, it is. There are 3 different versions of Hard Knocks this year, gentlemen. I think we've talked about it like bits and pieces over the last few months, but I've got it all kind of broken down here. There will be 5 episodes of the first installment of 2024 Hard Knocks, beginning tonight on HBO Max.
Okay.
It's the off-season version
with
the Giants. 5 episodes going from July 2nd through July 30th.
Okay.
Then you will have the training camp version, which I think is the more traditional
that's the one we're used to.
That's with the Chicago Bears.
Interesting.
That's going to run 5 episodes as well. from August 6th through September 3rd.
Okay.
Then we have the in-season version that they have tried in the past. I think Amazon Prime has also done one.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think
you're correct.
And that's all it just says is the AFC North. We don't have a team yet.
The North.
And that's going to be the December 3rd is when it starts. That goes into the postseason, and it's a minimum of 7 episodes, depending on... So they'll pick a playoff team, or a team that should make the playoffs, and follow them as long as their season goes.
All right, gun to your head, which one do you watch if you had to? I'm watching the Bears one.
I think the in-season one.
Yeah, I would watch... No, wait, the in-season one.
Yeah.
I would probably watch that one, the in-season one.
You don't want to watch the Bears, Caleb Williams?
They're all the same.
They are all the same.
They're all the same.
We needed less Hard Knocks, not more.
Right, you got more.
I needed like, hey, we're going to do 3 big episodes. You're really going to like them. Not more and different teams.
Here's my question. It just feels like, okay, this was a good idea when it happened, but it's
great idea.
Time is
see
spent.
It feels that way. And maybe this is just the Aaron Rodgers effect, but according to Front Office Sports, HBO said that last year's traditional training camp series saw its best viewership in 13 years.
Who was it?
They covered the Jets.
Yeah,
because a lot going on.
Viewership of everything has become so fractured in streaming that you don't even need that big of an audience to justify it anymore.
Sure.
So they're going to keep doing it. My question to the two of you is: production company comes to us right now and they said they want to do behind the scenes of a morning radio show.
Sure.
And follow us for 6 weeks. The cameras, they come home with us, they come to work with us, do interviews during the day. You know, it's going to be on a streaming series somewhere. They got a platform lined up. Do we say yes or no? Would you do that?
I think you say yes, but I just don't know if you're going to get the authentic, like 100% real authentic. I mean, that means they got to go into our text messages and because it's not like we talk a lot or hang out after the show much because you got other jobs. I got a family, you know, and it's like, what are you going to get? Hey, what do you guys? What do you
about
have this?
To set up more activities like they do yeah. on Real Housewives?
Yeah,
they'd
yeah,
have
yeah.
to have like
which would be all fake.
That's not set up.
That's ben not would have the to real hide the dead bodies he's got in his garage.
That's right. You'd have to let him in your garage. That would be that's not authentic. It's not authentic.
But neither is Hard Knocks.
No, exactly. You're never going to get a true authentic
they
thing unless
the,
you do
they
hidden,
have their
hidden
off the
cameras.
Field activities as well. You think that's not the TV producers that are setting that up?
Unless you do hidden cameras and stuff, then that's the only.
I mean,
way.
They have like cameras in the studio, like in between the
right.
discussions we have during the breaks and stuff.
All the bits that we can't do on air that we do in here. Yeah, that'd be great for us.
But you'd then be a little more guarded, knowing
of course.
Cameras are on all the
right.
time.
Of course.
That's the same thing that happens in the NFL.
That's exactly
no
right.
No one is their 100% authentic self when they know a camera is on.
Yeah, no doubt.
No one.
Nobody.
Ever.
No, you can't be. But I would do it. People wanted it.
Yeah.
I'm open to access. I think you'd be pretty bored.
Probably you'd be on the Roku channel.
I think you'd be pretty bored. You come home to my house, just me screaming to my kids going crazy, Hannah and I butting heads about something, like... All right. Just 2 hours of us asking, what do you want to do for dinner? No, what do you want to do for dinner? No, what do you want to do for dinner? What do you want to do for dinner? Every night. It's just Groundhog Day. Every day is the same. No, what do you want to do? I don't care. What do you want?
Would show them how he messed his knee up a few months ago.
All right. I don't need to bring that up.
Let's move on.
I would need some private time.
Non-camera rooms.
Non-camera yeah. rooms. Yeah, we're just going to go live to the audio here. No, you're not. You can't.
Let's move on. So ESPN, they are owned by Disney, and they're going very Disney with their newest venture. And when I see companies or teams or organizations put on these big, extravagant experiences, it's usually a quick no for me.
Yep.
You know, hey, join us on the ESPN cruise or whatever. I'm like, no thanks. But there is a new one coming out, new experience that I think is actually pretty interesting. It's called ESPN Experiences Take Me Out to the Ballparks. And this is a trip. It's a 5-day, 4-night trip from August 29th through September. And you can pay to get the ultimate sports fan media baseball experience.
Okay.
It's not cheap. It's going to cost $7,000 a person.
At home?
That says with double occupancy or $8,500 for single occupancy. So I guess if you wanted to go by yourself and stay, like,
not have a roommate.
Yeah, not have a roommate.
Pay an extra $8,500.
Yeah. Right. What you get is
doing the 85.
You will get to go to Fenway Park in Boston. You go to Yankee Stadium in New York, and you will go to a game at Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia. You'll also get a private tour of the Jackie Robinson Museum in New York. You'll get an MVP tour of ESPN's headquarters in Bristol, Connecticut. Get meet and greets with all the on-air talent, David Cohn, Michael Kay, Doug Glanville, Carl Ravitch, Buster Olney, and it says, and more.
And more.
Don't know exactly what.
So three games? Three games, 80 of these seats better be outstanding. Outstanding.
I mean, you can set your own trip up to go to all those ballparks.
But you're not going to do any of the meet and greets and stuff at ESPN. If that's something that, I don't think it would. I like the experience, though. I did the U2 experience because I was forced into doing a U2 experience.
I'm guessing they're pretty good seats.
I would guess for $8,500. But, like, I was
How much would it cost for us to plan a trip to all three cities and go to games? Probably, you're probably right in that area.
Yeah, 8, you're not getting bucks. A deal on this. I mean, the reason they can put it together is they can charge a premium for what they're doing and make money on it. So, clearly, if you did this piecemeal yourself, you'd be able to spend less. Now, you're right. You wouldn't necessarily be able to set up meet and greets with all the ESPN hosts. But, I mean, Woods is very nice. You send him a nice email, he'll come meet you.
It's true.
Really, whenever you want. So
it's true.
You probably you can email Linda Cohn, and if she's nice, you say, hey,
can you run outside?
You mind if I come by and just do a little meet and greet during
the
ballpark tour?
Why are you here? Right. Linda Cohn's going to come outside and say hello. Do you mind?
Stupid. Hey, you ask nicely enough for anything. There's a lot of people who will say yes.
I will say, man, I do like a package. The U2 thing really sold me. I was going to buy the regular tickets and I couldn't. And I wanted to go see them so badly at the Sphere. And I was like, well, if you can buy this VIP experience, it was a fortune. And I was like, I'm only going to live on this planet one time. I have to do it. So I did it. I loved every second. They gave me a book. We got to go to the museum. Like, the whole thing was, the rooms were great. The tickets were phenomenal. It was the best night we've ever had, maybe, as a couple. So I'm like, it was worth every penny. So I kind of like the package deal thing. Can't do it all the time, right? You can't do it for every concert, you know?
Pick and choose.
You got to pick and choose your moments. But if you love baseball, it's pretty good.
I mean, I've never been to the East Coast. I've certainly never been to any of those stadiums.
Bro, you'd have a blast.
That would be... I would be listening for that one, for sure. All right, and then I tend to tell you guys about weird or new foods that are coming out, and I got this one sent to
me. Did we order our Red Bull barbecue sauce yet? Or no, 5-Hour Energy barbecue sauce.
Crap,
that's right. Yeah, all right.
It's Tuesday, isn't it?
Get in there.
I think it was last Tuesday. I got a new one here, and it is from Cup Noodles. Had a cup noodle from time to time.
Cup O noodles.
It's called Cup Noodles.
It's not.
Cup Noodles. Cup O noodles.
It's Cup of Noodles.
It's Cup Noodles is cup what noodles. The name
is
of the brand is. Nope, that's the brand I'm that you know right. and
is
love.
Is this one of those misremembered things?
No,
it's not Cup O noodles?
It's Cup Noodles.
It's Cup Noodles.
He's right, dude. Cup Noodles chicken, yeah.
Well, they've got a new flavor coming out, and it's only available in the United States.
This is
and
repugnant.
It's Campfire S'mores.
So
Cup
gross.
Noodle Campfire S'mores.
Stupid.
The taste is described as a blend of decadent chocolate, marshmallow, and graham cracker flavors with a smoky note. They suggest having it with crushed up marshmallow or crushed up graham crackers and the mini marshmallows as well. I guess you just
noodles
put water in it and then throw it in the microwave and it.
Is it there noodles in there?
Yeah, it's ramen.
It's ramen with graham cracker.
Doesn't sound like a good combination.
What's
the broth made out of?
Hershey's syrup.
Broth? No, I mean, what's like
chicken broth?
Something.
Oh, yeah, I don't. Just, yeah, described as a decadent chocolate, marshmallow, and graham cracker flavors.
It's like it's dessert. I just don't know that I want watery
dessert
like chocolate
noodles.
Milk with noodles in it, or what's going on here?
Do you like s'mores?
I do not.
I really don't either. It's like sacrilege to say, but my kids made some recently at their grandmother's house. And I was like, oh.
The juice isn't worth the squeeze.
It's not, dude. It's
someone
not.
Handed me a perfectly done s'more.
I'll eat it.
Eat it. Do I want to go through the whole toasting of the marshmallow, graham cracker sandwich,
trying to get it all to fit,
to stay, and then you take one bite, the whole thing cracks,
falls apart. Chocolate's still cold. It's usually always cold. Yeah.
When I'm just not a big fan of like chocolate. I don't like Hershey's chocolate. So I've never been big on the s'mores. Now, there was a restaurant we almost went to in Las Vegas a couple weeks ago where they had like the table side dessert option was s'mores. They brought out like a little flame and you got to make your own s'mores at the table. I was like, okay, I guess I would do that.
I feel like I'm doing all the work.
But yeah. And so if you want to try the
Cup Noodles
Campfire S'mores Edition, it's available for a limited time at Walmart and Walmart.com. They go for $1.18 a cup.
All right, I have been really tearing my hair out about this cup o' noodles thing because I was like, "What? Well, it's not
ruined your life.
All it's right, cup noodles."
I looked it up, and according to a couple of internet Reddit threads, up until 1993, it was cup o' noodles, and then they changed it in America to just cup noodles. And since 1993, so the past 31 years, it's just been cup noodles and not cup o' noodles.
It's been 30 years. Get with the times.
Why would you change it? Cup of noodles.
I don't know.
So I was born in 90. So, I mean, my whole life it's been cup noodles. But I remember it being referred to as cup of noodles. Oh, I got a cup of noodles for lunch or something.
So bad for you.
Awful.
So bad.
I mean,
awful.
It was never Irish, so I don't know why, if cup o' noodles
cup
made
of the morning to you.
Sense at all to begin with, but.
Thank you, Polly.
You're very welcome.
Cup noodles.
I gotta go get my cup of noodles. He's downstairs right now. I'll be right back.
Brian O'Grady and cup o' noodles. All right. Yeah, you got the kids coming in for the last couple of segments. Basketball Ben might make an appearance. We had some more free agency news. I thought it might make the Rondle Report. It didn't, so save it for
me. How do I tell Woods he has a live read here?
Thank you, Paulie. Well, I'll just figure it out for him. We can trade. I'll do the farmer's dog here. He can do the other one later. So we'll be right back with more Ben and Woods after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
I hear as I was walking out the door that Basketball Ben is going to make an appearance.
I mean, obviously the free agency stuff is continuing to progress at a very rapid rate. We talked about it yesterday. Jason Tatum got a huge contract extension, largest deal in NBA history. Klay Thompson's going to the Mavs here in Dallas on a 3-year, $50 million sign and trade. Lakers have gotten really nothing they've wanted. Didn't get the coach they wanted, haven't got the players they wanted. LeBron can't find anyone who wants to be his teammate. It's been a miserable offseason for the Lakers, but, you know, they've won the offseason before. It doesn't necessarily mean you win the season, so I'm just gonna wait. I think the most interesting story, though, is that just 2 weeks after winning the NBA title, the owner of the Boston Celtics is selling the team. Wick Grousbeck, who bought the team back in the early 2000s for...
Wick?
W-Y-C. Wick.
Wick Grousbeck.
Beck.
Beck.
Wick Grousbeck.
Sounds made up.
Bought the team in 2002 for $360
million. Ooh,
and now the Boston Celtics, who probably are going to sell... I mean, probably the largest sale price ever in the history of a basketball team. Because they just won a championship. And
good time to sell, I guess.
You know, got the most titles in NBA history. The Phoenix Suns just sold for $4 billion, what was that, about a year ago? So you've got to figure $5 billion without breaking a sweat for the Boston Celtics. Pretty good on your $360 million investment. But the timing here is very cold and calculated. Hey, we just won a title. I now have to pay all these players, including giant contract extensions. Why don't I just cash out? I got my ring. Now let's take my $4.7 billion profit and walk away as a titleist, as a champion. I got it done. What else do I need to do as a sports owner?
Win another one.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, how can you resist the siren's call once you've won a championship of not wanting to stick around and enjoy it and be that championship owner for a few years? Like,
I know.
I got
like,
a title, but he's walking away going, I'm never going to have a better time to sell this team.
Was there a reason for it?
I have not seen like a specific reason. The statement just said that they are expecting to sell a majority interest. Wick Grousbeck is going to remain as governor for a while. So he's kind of like Mark Cuban. He's going to stick around with the team. I think. Basically, he just wants, he knows there's a lot of money to be had and might as well cash in.
Yeah, strike while the iron is hot, so to speak.
I think so.
$5 billion.
That's my guess.
For the Boston Celtics.
If the Phoenix Suns are worth $4
billion. Right.
Yeah. At least $5 billion, right? For the Boston Celtics.
Good Lord.
Maybe more.
One day I'd like to invest $1,000 and make $200 million on it. What did Steinbrenner buy the Yankees for? Like $75,000 or something? And then within a decade, it was worth, whatever it was.
Trying to put myself in like a Celtics fan's shoes there. Like, you win the title and then your owner sells. Are you bummed? And I go, well, that franchise has franchise stability, it feels like, no matter who is in charge. Like, they're the Celtics. The Lakers, there's franchise stability. It's like it'd be so different if the Padres got so hot, won the World Series, and then Shil Seidler and the Seidler family just sold the team just to cash out. You'd be like, oh, we have just been set back 10 years.
Yeah.
It wasn't always the case. Investing in professional sports teams, back in the sometime 60s and 70s, not a good thing.
They still make you feel like
owners would lose their shirt.
Still make you feel like, how many owners in baseball cry poor every single year?
But honestly, if you had the old time machine to go back and tell yourself, your young self, what to invest in, around the 1990s.
Sports.
Get in on a sports team.
Yeah.
Get in on an NBA team, an NFL team, obviously, a Major League Baseball team. And the gains have been just ridiculously exponential on those investments. And I think there's, there's reasons for it. Media is the big thing. You got programming.
Back 30 years, I'm still investing in Apple.
Yes, I'm investing in Apple. But I take that money and I invest in a sports team.
But, the reason is pretty simple. It's in a day and age when media rights of shows, people are watching less live TV than ever, except for sports. It's the one thing that we still have to sit down for, 2.5 hours, watch all the commercials, and, when's the last time you watched an actual television program full through with all the commercials? Non-streamed,
I don't know, but
live.
My 6-year-old who's sitting to my right knows every single Padres commercial that runs. Every single one. We'll be watching the game, and he'll start doing, obviously he does Bill Howe, Wiener Howe, but he also does the Saquon by heart. That's the only thing we sit and watch commercials for. That's it.
Joe Musgrove has traded in his giant stack of pancakes for a big burrito with flowers on it.
Yeah, playing golf out there, real good.
I'm working on a swing. Even though a pitcher.
But what's the best part of the best part of being a starting pitcher?
Rest days between starts.
100%. That big old stack of pancakes looks delicious, doesn't it? Yeah, man, that's a staggering figure for the Boston Celtics. Staggering.
And he didn't get in the ground floor. It was already $360 million. You're talking about back in the day, Steinbrenner investments that were really
nothing.
Pretty modest.
Paltry.
And people were worried that they were overpaying. Oh, my God, George Steinbrenner, he's going to lose a fortune paying for the New York Yankees that much. No. No, in fact, he did not. That investment worked out quite well. For the Steinbrenner family.
$10 million. Bought it for $10 million.
Probably worth about $10 billion now.
Yeah.
$10 million to $10 billion, just like that.
In 1973, which probably at the time, $10 million was just so much dough, but it definitely paid for that and then some. His initial investment, by the way, $168,000.
And you don't even have to be a good owner to make that's the thing. Even the owners of teams that never win anything, even the Donald Sterlings, who are so bad that they have to be forced out, still end up making hundreds and millions of dollars on their investment.
Their golden parachute.
What were the Commanders sold again for?
Ridiculous
amount.
Dan Snyder made so much money for being the worst owner in the history of sports. You feel like there should be some consequences to that, like financial consequences? No. No, it's just financial benefits to being a horrible, horrible owner.
And human being and everything else. Yeah, good call.
I'm sure the Rockies owner is just counting his money. What's his name? Dick Monfort?
Dick Monfort.
Just counting his money. It's ridiculous. So, good for Wick Grousebeck and all the billions he's about to make on the Boston Celtics. All right, we'll come back. Final segment, Padres baseball. We'll get you ready for the series against the Texas Rangers coming up. As we mentioned, some pitching change matchups Pitching matchup changes for the series coming up. We'll get to all of that. Finishing off the day with Bennett Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Just saw a tweet over the break from the best and worst defensive players, according to FanGraphs, this season. And there are no Padres among the best defenders, but there are a bunch of them among the worst defenders.
Awesome.
Love that.
Including Luis Camposano behind the plate has the worst FanGraphs rating in baseball.
I could believe that based on the eye test.
And then both the second basemen were actually Padres, in Luis Arraez and Jake Cronenworth, which... I get, you believe numbers more than your eyes,
sure,
because you can't see everything that's happening, but my eyes do not tell me that Jake Cronenworth is a bad defender. They tell me he's a good defender, both at second base and first base.
Yeah, I think he graded out better at first base than he did at second. And, you know, there's a lot more ground to cover. Does he get to every ball, you know, that the elite second baseman get to? Probably not, and that probably hurts
him. I don't feel like he's just a slug standing there and everything's going by him. I've seen bad second base play, and it doesn't look like what Jake does. He makes a lot of good plays out there. I feel like he's a plus defender in the field, wherever you put him. I don't feel like he's one of the worst defenders, but I do.
Arise, I can get
Pisano. The numbers don't seem to lie there. Why do they lie so much about Jake?
Don't know. I don't know. The defensive one. I think defensive numbers are the ones that aren't they the most subjective?
Eno has said that they definitely have the most work to do in trying to figure out how to numerically compute defensive value. That there certainly is some flaws that they haven't totally worked out in the formulas that compute how valuable you are defensively.
Yeah, I just don't know. I don't know. Satan Bluffer says, if a player makes all the plays within his limited range, the numbers tend to still not like them. Don't read too much in them season to season.
I just don't feel like Jake is extremely limited in his range either.
I don't either. I'll take it, man.
Ultimately, I think second base is one of the least impactful positions defensively on the field, and we don't need Jake Cronenworth to be number one analytics defensively at second base. We need him to hit the ball.
Yeah, he needs to hit, and he's very beyond serviceable at second base, and really, like you said, graded out better at first. You know a bad second baseman when you see one, and I don't get that sense from him. I do with Arraez, and certainly at first is not.
Yeah, but if Arraez is leading the league in hitting.
Like,
oh, whatever.
All right, fine.
Deal with it if he's your second baseman.
Yeah, Jake, did he win a Gold Glove?
I think he did.
Did he?
Or was
he
a finalist, at least.
Yeah.
At second base.
Yeah. Yeah, Campy is Campy, though, you watch and you go, oh, I've seen this kind of fall off since the beginning of the year. Pretty poor. But, yeah, I mean, look, all those do are probably hurt their contract value moving forward. So you're lowering the price on Luis Arraez right now. So maybe it's not the worst thing.
All right, interesting series coming up. Padres and Rangers. We'll get into it in our final segment here after a check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan. So it's kind of interesting as you look at this upcoming series. I mentioned the Padres have reworked their starting rotation slightly. They're moving Dylan Cease up to pitch today. Adam Mazur will pitch tomorrow, and then Michael King in the series finale. But in a simply one-on-one comparison with the ERAs of starting pitchers, the Rangers have the advantage in every single game of this series. Nathan Eovaldi going tonight, 3.45 ERA against Dylan Cease's 3.84. Obviously, John Gray, who's got a 3.77, better than Adam Mazur, who's over 7. And then Max Scherzer, who is just back from the injured list, but has pitched pretty well, 1.74 ERA against Michael King's 3.61. You look at that, and you know that is the core of their rotation. You start wondering, well, why are the Texas Rangers then struggling so badly? Coming off a World Series tunnel, they're 38-46. They're well back in both the AL West and the wild card race in the American League. I mean, they have home run, you know, sluggers. Adelis Garcia, 16 homers. Corey Seager has 15, more than anybody on the Padres. Where are these struggles coming from for the Texas Rangers? They simply just have a really bad manager that doesn't know what he's doing in Bruce Bochy.
Right.
I don't think that can really be it. The Texas Rangers, ultimately, they're just not hitting consistently this season. And
I've watched.
And that's about the only explanation I can give you.
Listen, I'll reserve judgment until after the series. I've watched an inning
Not much.
Of Texas Rangers baseball this year, which puts me on par with the average Texas Ranger fan in the Arlington. I texted a couple buddies last night separately that live in Texas. I said, hey, you going to go see my Padres this week? They go, nah, Rangers aren't very fun to watch right now. So they're, I mean, it's full bore Dallas Cowboys training camp right now. That's it. That's all they're thinking about, probably all they're talking about right now. And if they get back into the race, they'll heat back up in September with their viewership of the team. That's how it's always been, having grown up in that area. Didn't matter how good they were, how many stars they had. It just, it's Cowboys town, period. So I will reserve judgment. I do look at them, and based on what they accomplished last year, I say, yeah, they're certainly not out of it by any stretch. Again, when you've got arms like that and you got Scherzer coming back, it's going to be a tall task for the San Diego Padres. Now, the only thing that you're excited about is you got three righties, but they're all guys that can hump it up a little bit, especially Valdi tonight, man. I mean, you better be on the heater tonight. And if you're on the heater, you can win this game. If you're not, he could pick you apart.
I mean, looking at the numbers, I guess here's the big difference. The Rangers only have two regulars in their lineup who are even getting on base 30% of the time, a 300 OBP or better. Corey Seager and Josh Smith at second base. Every other one of their starters has an OBP that starts with a 2.
They just striking out a ton?
Yeah, not walking, not getting on base. For comparison's sake, the Padres, every single regular in the lineup is over 300, leading baseball Jurickson Pro 4 at 408, Tatis 354, Ha-Sung Kim 336, Jackson Merrill 328, Cronenworth 324, Manny, even if it's a slow start, 314, Solano 349, Arise 352. Every single Padre is getting on base, and almost no Texas Rangers are getting on base. That's why OBP is still very important. I mean, you like, you know, batting average is good. OPS and slugging is great. They've got slug. They're just not getting on base. So when they get a home run, it's almost always a solo shot. Nobody is getting on base for the Texas Rangers this year.
Interesting. Yeah, it's interesting stuff. Ivaldi tonight, he's a five-pitch pitcher, Benny. He's going to throw that heater at you. It's about 96, so you got to be on that. Then when you're looking heater, he's going to throw that splitty at you, and his splitty's pretty nasty, too. It's low 90s as well. He throws a curveball, throws a cutter, throws a slider a little bit. He's a five-pitch pitcher.
He's good, but it's hard to shut down the Padres' offense completely because they will probably make contact, and all they need is one inning where when they make their contact, that a few balls fall in. And then they have guys on base, and then they tend to bring them home. And that's why the Padres lead baseball in, what, four-run innings this year?
Yeah.
That's what they've done really well. And occasionally there are games where the balls don't fall in, or they don't get those hits with runners in scoring position, like Sunday, the Nudistertian game, when they only scored one.
Very well done.
Because, wow, you know, they got hits, they got eight, they had runners in scoring position, but they didn't ever have that inning where that all came together. But most games, for the most part, they do. They find, even against the tough pitchers, you know, Arise has his leadoff single there, and then one of the next two guys gets a hit, and then it's first and third. Then you get one or more, two or more hits, or someone gets a home run, and it's boom. You've got three or four runs on the board just like that. And that's been the recipe for Padres victories this season. Will it happen this series? You never know for sure that you're going up against tough pitchers, but it's not, I don't feel like, oh, they've got no chance against any of these guys. I feel like they absolutely have a chance against every single pitcher they face because of their approach and the way they do it.
I do wonder, man, you know, you think about some teams that may be sellers, and we talked about the Texas Rangers potentially maybe being one of those teams. I don't think that you could throw in the towel, certainly with an entire month of July left and you're getting guys back healthy. But man, if they did continue to struggle down the stretch, Ivaldi is an interesting guy. He signed a 2-year, $34 million deal. I think it was before last season. So would he be...
How big a sellers can the defending champs really become?
I mean, I have no idea.
You got to think, if anything, they would hope to restock for next year.
Why wouldn't they be sellers if they...
If they have a crap July...
I mean, who do they have on, like, whose contract expires this year?
Is Ivaldi... Is he got one more year?
Ivaldi has a vesting option for next year, which if he... gets 300 innings over the last two seasons, gets to $20 million.
So he still has a year and a half left.
So my guess is that that will, since he's been pretty healthy, that will vest. So he'll have
another year. I'm putting myself in their shoes. They just won the title last year. You think you have, it's not working out this year, but you still think you have the roster to go make another run. You're not just going to start dumping everybody. This season may be gone or out of reach. So if you have anybody whose contract, who's going to be a free agent after this year, yeah, I could see them being on the move.
That'd be interesting.
Start unloading.
Yeah,
guys.
This is it. Look, I mean, this is a huge series for them. Huge, huge series for them. The Astros are, I mean, the Astros are turning back into the Astros again. We all kind of knew, we all had one eye open on the Astros. I just have not followed that division very much at all. Probably the division in baseball.
The Mariners have been the best team, but not good enough to put the Astros away.
They're dying.
And now the Astros are hot on their heels.
Yep.
And I haven't looked at the odds recently, but my guess is that odds makers probably make the Astros the favorites the rest of the season. It's got to be close with the Mariners, at least. Even with the Mariners, it's only about 3.5 games, I think, now, back in the division for the Houston Astros at this point. So they are coming on strong, and the Rangers have a couple of teams ahead of them, and they're not coming on strong at all.
Not now. Right? Don't let them come on strong now. Don't be the team that gets them right. Don't be the team that gets them, you know, feeling good again. They haven't been playing good baseball. We want them to keep.
Well, it starts with Dylan Cease doing something he hasn't done in the last couple of months, and that is put together two consecutive really good starts.
Yes.
Had a great one his last time out. Last
Phenomenal.
Wednesday against the Washington Nationals, went 7 innings, 1 hit, no runs. Best start he's had in probably, month and a half. But we've seen a couple of good starts, and then he kind of, the next one is not so good. Can he put together just two really good starts in a row and get the Padres off to a series win, you know, chance to win another series? They'll have three wins on the road trip. This is a big one today.
Knowing you've got Major going tomorrow,
yeah.
I mean, this is kind of a little bit of one of those sellout games, you know, if you're Mike Schilt, and they manage that way. He absolutely does. Like, if he needs Bobby tonight for 4 outs, he's going to do it.
Oh, for sure.
No question.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a chance to win that
he's
game.
He's got a lot of bullets in his chamber for tonight's game.
He does, and I think he's going to use them tonight. You always want to win when your ace is on the bump, certainly, knowing, again, who's to follow the next day. And King has been really good. He could go out and dominate the Rangers easily. So, but this is that one that you really, really want to get. If you can get off to a lead early, watch him manage that game a little bit differently than he would.
Yeah, in a universe that makes sense, which is rarely the one the Padres
play
occupy, Padres, you know, take this series by winning today and Thursday.
Yeah, correct.
And you come home with a 4-2 road trip, and you're more than happy with that. Now, could they win tomorrow with Major on the mound?
They
sure.
did, yeah, the last
sure.
start they did.
They're always, you never know when the Padres are going to drop that 8-run inning all of a sudden, and that can turn anybody into a winner. But in the universe that, you know, may has some logic to it, get today's game, you know, hope, cross your fingers for tomorrow, and then give yourself a chance to win the series with Michael King against Scherzer, who, you know, again, don't know what he's got right now. Still probably a little hit or miss coming back from the injured list on Thursday. And that's how this series should shape up on paper.
But we could
now,
get swept.
Yeah, you just completely ignore that in real life.
Exactly right.
When the Padres could sweep or get swept, and we really don't know what's going to happen.
Win tonight, baby. Win tonight. Find a way to win the first game.
That would
game.
Be a good way to get things started.
Yeah, they still scare me. They've got those players where you're like, man, this guy's a really, really tough out. You know, Wyatt Langford hitting for the cycle the other day. Like, he's starting to round into form. They've got guys that haven't. I don't know if Seager, his availability for the series, I think he's in. He's just one of the scariest hitters in the game of baseball. Just an absolute stud. Imagine letting that guy walk from your franchise. I mean, just amazing to me. So hopefully, I don't know if he's back or not. I know he got dotted on the hand. I did not see him playing against the Orioles in the last game. But again, I know nothing about the Texas Rangers.
But, you know, they had a day off yesterday as well. Everyone trying to reset for the start of this series. So we'll see. Yeah, as you said, though, Padres bullpen should be in good shape.
Yep.
With the off days yesterday, Thursday before that. Even with having to use some of the pitchers in the series in Boston, didn't have to break out Robert Suarez at all. Jeremiah Estrada had the one inning on Sunday. Everyone should be available to the Padres in this game today for a chance to start the series off on a good note and put yourself in it with two chances, essentially, to win the series the next couple of days.
Yeah, Seager had an MRI, came back negative, so it's just a matter of his discomfort. Had the day off yesterday, so we'll see. I mean, you know, if he's in the lineup, he's not having a Corey Seager-like year, and even in a down year for him, Benny, still got 15 bombs for him, so he's pretty nasty.
All right, we are done for today. We'll come back tomorrow. We'll have a game to wrap up. It'll be our last day of the week as we get you ready for the 4th of July holiday. Everyone have a good rest of your Tuesday. For executive producer and imaging director Paul Reindel, for Stephen Woods, I'm Ben Higgins. Annie and Elston coming up next here on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody. Just saw a tweet over the break from the best and worst defensive players according to FanGraphs this season. And there are no Padres among the best defenders, but there are a bunch of them among the worst defenders.
Awesome.
Love that.
Including Luis Camposano behind the plate has the worst FanGraphs rating in baseball.
I could believe that based on the eye test.
And then both the second basemen were actually Padres, in Luis Arraez and Jake Cronenworth, which... I get you believe numbers more than your eyes,
sure,
because you can't see everything that's happening. But my eyes do not tell me that Jake Cronenworth is a bad defender. They tell me he's a good defender, both at second base and first base.
Yeah, I think he graded out better at first base than he did at second. And, you know, there's a lot more ground to cover. Does he get to every ball, you know, that the elite second baseman get to? Probably not, and that probably hurts.
But I don't feel like he's just a slug standing there and everything's going by him. I've seen bad second base play, and it doesn't look like what Jake does. He makes a lot of good plays out there. I feel like he's a plus defender in the field, wherever you put him. I don't feel like he's one of the worst defenders, but I do.
Arise, I can get
Pisano. The numbers don't seem to lie there. Why do they lie so much about Jake?
Don't know. I don't know. The defensive one. I think defensive numbers are the ones that are. Aren't they the most subjective?
Eno has said that they definitely have the most work to do in trying to figure out how to numerically compute defensive value. That there certainly is some flaws that they haven't totally worked out in the formulas that compute how valuable you are defensively.
Yeah, I just don't know. I don't know. Satan Bluffer says, if a player makes all the plays within his limited range, the numbers tend to still not like them. Don't read too much in them season to season.
I just don't feel like Jake is extremely limited in his range either.
I don't either. I'll take it, man. I'll
ultimately, I think second base is one of the least impactful positions defensively on the field, and we don't need Jake Cronenworth to be number one analytics defensively at second base. We need him to hit the ball.
Yeah, he needs to hit, and he's very beyond serviceable at second base, and really, like you said, graded out better at first. Yeah, you know a bad second base when you see one, and I don't get that sense from him. I do with Arraez, and certainly at first is not.
Yeah, but if Arraez is leading the league in
right,
hitting,
you're hitting.
Like, oh, whatever.
All right, fine.
Deal with it if he's your second baseman.
Yeah, Jake, did he win a Gold Glove?
I think he did.
Did
or
he?
Or was
no.
the finalist, at least.
Yeah.
At second base.
Yeah. Yeah, Campy is Campy though. You watch and you go, oh, I've seen this kind of fall off since the beginning of the year. Pretty poor. But yeah, I mean, look, all those do are probably hurt their contract value moving forward. So you're lowering the price on Luis Arraez right now. So maybe it's not the worst thing.
All right, interesting series coming up, Padres and Rangers. We'll get into it in our final segment here after a check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan. So it's kind of interesting as you look at this upcoming series. I mentioned the Padres have reworked their starting rotation slightly. They're moving Dylan Cease up to pitch today. Adam Mazur will pitch tomorrow, and then Michael King in the series finale. But in a simply one-on-one comparison with the ERAs of starting pitchers, the Rangers have the advantage in every single game of this series. Nathan Eovaldi going tonight, 3.45 ERA against Dylan Cease's 3.84. Obviously, John Gray, who's got a 3.77, better than Adam Mazur, who's over 7. And then Max Scherzer, who is just back from the injured list, but has pitched pretty well, 1.74 ERA against Michael King's 3.61. You look at that, and you know that is the core of their rotation. You start wondering, well, why are the Texas Rangers then struggling so badly? Coming off a World Series tunnel, they're 38-46. They're well back in both the AL West and the wild card race in the American League. I mean, they have home run, you know, sluggers. Adelis Garcia, 16 homers. Corey Seager has 15, more than anybody on the Padres. Where are these struggles coming from for the Texas Rangers. They simply just have a really bad manager that doesn't know what he's doing in Bruce Bochy. Right. I don't think that can really be it. The Texas Rangers, ultimately, they're just not hitting consistently this season. And
I've watched...
And that's about the only explanation I can give you.
Listen, I'll reserve judgment until after the series. I've watched an inning...
Not much.
...of Texas Rangers baseball this year, which puts me on par with the average Texas Ranger fan in the Arlington. I texted a couple buddies last night separately that live in Texas. I said, hey, you going to go see my Padres this week? They go, nah, Rangers aren't very fun to watch right now. So there, I mean, it's full-bore... Dallas Cowboys training camp right now. That's it. That's all they're thinking about, probably all they're talking about right now. And if they get back into the race, they'll heat back up in September with their viewership of the team. That's how it's always been, having grown up in that area. Didn't matter how good they were, how many stars they had. It just, it's Cowboys town, period. So I will reserve judgment. I do look at them, and based on what they accomplished last year, I say, yeah, they're certainly not out of it by any stretch. Again, when you've got arms like that and you got Scherzer coming back, it's going to be a tall task for the San Diego Padres. Now, the only thing that you're excited about is you got three righties, but they're all guys that can hump it up a little bit, especially Valdi tonight, man. I mean, you better be on the heater tonight. And if you're on the heater, you can win this game. If you're not, he could pick you apart.
I mean, looking at the numbers, I guess here's the big difference. The Rangers only have two regulars in their lineup who are even getting on base 30% of the time, a 300 OBP or better. Corey Seager and Josh Smith at second base. Every other one of their starters has an OBP that starts with a 2.
They just striking out a ton?
Yeah, not walking, not getting on base. For comparison's sake, the Padres... Every single regular in the lineup is over 300, leading baseball Jurickson Pro 4 at 408, Tatis 354, Ha-Sung Kim 336, Jackson Merrill 328, Cronenworth 324, Manny, even if it's a slow start, 314, Solano 349, Arraez 352. Every single Padre is getting on base, and almost no Texas Rangers are getting on base. That's why OBP is still very... important. I mean, you like, you know, batting average is good. OPS and slugging is great. They've got slug. They're just not getting on base. So when they get a home run, it's almost always a solo shot. Nobody is getting on base for the Texas Rangers this year.
Interesting. Yeah, it's interesting stuff. Ivaldi tonight, he's a five-pitch pitcher, Benny. He's going to throw that heater at you. It's about 96, so you got to be on that. Then when you're looking heater, he's going to throw that splitty at you, and his splitty's pretty nasty, too. It's low 90s as well. He throws a curveball, throws a cutter, throws a slider a little bit. He's a five-pitch pitcher.
He's good, but it's hard to shut down the Padres' offense completely because they will probably make contact, and all they need is one inning where when they make their contact that – a few balls fall in, and then they have guys on base, and then they tend to bring them home, and that's why the Padres lead baseball in, what, four-run innings this year?
Yeah.
That's what they've done really well. And occasionally there are games where the balls don't fall in, or they don't get those hits with runners in scoring position, like Sunday, the Nudistertian game, when they only scored one.
Very well done.
Because, wow. You know, they got hits, they got eight, they had runners in scoring position, but they didn't ever have that inning where that all came together. But most games, for the most part, they do. They find, even against the tough pitchers, you know, Arraez has his leadoff single there, and then one of the next two guys gets a hit, and then it's first and third. Then you get one or more, two or more hits, or someone gets a home run, and it's boom. You've got three or four runs on the board just like that. And that's been the recipe for Padres' victories this season. Will it happen this series? You never know for sure that you're going up against tough pitchers, but it's not, I don't feel like, oh, they've got no chance against any of these guys. I feel like they absolutely have a chance against every single pitcher they face because of their approach and the way they do it.
I do wonder, man, you know, you think about some teams that may be sellers, and we talked about the Texas Rangers potentially maybe being one of those teams. I don't think that you can throw in the towel, certainly with an entire month of July left and you're getting guys back healthy. But man, if they did continue to struggle down the stretch, Ivaldi is an interesting guy. He signed a 2-year, $34 million deal. I think it was before last season. So does that, Would he be...
How big a sellers can the defending champs really become?
I mean, I have no idea.
You got to think, if anything, they would hope to restock for next year.
Why wouldn't they be sellers if they...
If they have a crap July...
I mean, who do they have on, like, whose contract expires this year?
Is Eovaldi, is he got one more year?
Eovaldi has a vesting option for next year, which if he gets 300 innings over the last two seasons, gets to $20 million.
So he still has a year and a half left.
So my guess is that will, since he's been pretty healthy, that will vest. So he'll have
another year. I'm putting myself in their shoes. They just won the title last year. You think you have, it's not working out this year, but you still think you have the roster to go make another run. You're not just going to start dumping everybody. This season may be gone or out of reach. So if you have anybody whose contract, who's going to be a free agent after this year, yeah, I could see them being on the move.
Pretty interesting.
Start unloading.
Yeah,
guys.
This is it. Look, I mean, this is a huge series for them. Huge, huge series for them. The Astros are, I mean, the Astros are turning back into the Astros again. We all kind of knew, we all had one eye open on the Astros. I just have not followed that division very much at all. Probably the division in baseball.
The Mariners have been the best team, but not good enough to put the Astros away.
They're dying.
And now the Astros are hot on their heels.
Yep.
And I haven't looked at the odds recently, but my guess is that odds makers probably make the Astros the favorites the rest of the season. It's got to be close with the Mariners, at least. Even with the Mariners, it's only about 3.5 games, I think, now, back in the division for the Houston Astros at this point. So they are coming on strong, and the Rangers have a couple of teams ahead of them, and they're not coming on strong at all.
Not now. Right? Don't let them come on strong now. Don't be the team that gets them right. Don't be the team that gets them, you know, feeling good again. They haven't been playing good baseball. We want them to keep.
Well, it starts with Dylan Cease doing something he hasn't done in the last couple of months, and that is put together two consecutive really good starts.
Yep.
Had a great one his last time out Wednesday against the Washington Nationals. Went 7 innings, 1 hit, no runs. Best start he's had in probably, month and a half. But we've seen a couple of good starts, and then he kind of, the next one is not so good. Can he put together just two really good starts in a row and get the Padres off to a series win, you know, chance to win another series? They'll have three wins on the road trip. This is a big one today.
Knowing you've got Major going tomorrow,
yeah.
I mean, this is kind of a little bit of one of those sellout games, you know, if you're Mike Schilt, and they manage that way. He absolutely does. Like, if he needs Bobby tonight for 4 outs, he's going to do it.
Oh, for sure.
No question.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a chance to win that
game.
He's
got a lot of bullets in his chamber for tonight's game.
He does, and I think he's going to use them tonight. You always want to win when your ace is on the bump, certainly, knowing, again, who's to follow the next day. And King has been really good. He could go out and dominate the Rangers easily. So, but this is that one that you really, really want to get. If you can get off to a lead early, watch him manage that game a little bit differently than he would.
Yeah, in a universe that makes sense, which is rarely the one the Padres Padres, you know, take this series by winning today and Thursday.
Yeah, correct.
And you come home with a 4-2 road trip, and you're more than happy with that. Now, could they win tomorrow with Major on the mound?
They
sure.
did, yeah, the last
sure.
start they did.
They're always, you never know when the Padres are going to drop that 8-run inning all of a sudden, and that can turn anybody into a winner. But in the universe that, you know, may has some logic to it, get today's game, you know, hope, cross your fingers for tomorrow, and then give yourself a chance to win the series with Michael King against Scherzer, who, you know, again, don't know what he's got right now. Still probably a little hit or miss coming back from the injured list on Thursday. And that's how this series should shape up on paper.
But we could
now,
get swept.
Yeah, you just completely ignore that in real life.
Exactly right.
When the Padres could sweep or get swept, and we really don't know what's going to happen.
Win tonight, baby. Win tonight. Find a way to win the first
game. That would
game.
Be a good way to get things started.
Yeah, they still scare me. They've got those players where you're like, man, this guy's a really, really tough out. You know, Wyatt Langford hitting for the cycle the other day. Like, he's starting to round into form. They've got guys that haven't. I don't know if Seager, his availability for the series, I think he's in. He's just one of the scariest hitters in the game of baseball. Just an absolute stud. Imagine letting that guy walk from your franchise. I mean, just amazing to me. So hopefully, I don't know if he's back or not. I know he got dotted on the hand. I did not see him playing against the Orioles in the last game. But again, I know nothing about the Texas Rangers.
But, you know, they had a day off yesterday as well. Everyone trying to reset for the start of this series. So we'll see. Yeah, as you said, though, Padres bullpen should be in good shape.
Yep.
With off days yesterday, Thursday before that. even with having to use some of the pitchers in the series in Boston, didn't have to break out Robert Suarez at all. Jeremiah Estrada had the one inning on Sunday. Everyone should be available to the Padres in this game today for a chance to start the series off on a good note and put yourself in it with two chances, essentially, to win the series the next couple of days.
Yeah, Seager had an MRI, came back negative, so it's just a matter of his discomfort. Had the day off yesterday, so we'll see. I mean, you know, if he's in the lineup, he's not having a Corey Seager-like year, and even in a down year for him, Benny, still got 15 bombs for him, so he's pretty nasty.
All right, we are done for today. We'll come back tomorrow. We'll have a game to wrap up. It'll be our last day of the week as we get you ready for the 4th of July holiday. Everyone have a good rest of your Tuesday. For executive producer and imaging director Paul Reindel, for Stephen Woods, I'm Ben Higgins. Annie and Elston coming up next here on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody.